Anyhow, I am very glad to say that I have been joined on the phone by my new chum, Dawn Llewellyn. Dawn, are you there?
I am, Kerry, yes.
Lovely. Well, Dawn, you are coming loud and proud from the fine area of, well, dare I say it, Blaenavon. Now, some would spell it with a V, some will spell it with an F, but it's still the same place, isn't it?
It is indeed, yes. Good old Blaenavon at the top of the Eastern Valley has plenty to offer.
It certainly does. A great place, and I've already been telling our lovely listeners that back in the day, a few years ago, it was a regular stop for my dear old dad, Stan Stennett, and myself with our company of touring performers when we used to present a pantomime that toured all over South Wales during the back end of November into the December period, and then even into a little bit of January every year. And the Workman's Hall in Blaenavon was a fine venue, still is a fine venue, I'm sure, run by a doughty team of volunteers and so on the committee, headed up by good old Shirley. And we had some happy times there.
Well, the Workman's Hall is one of our remarkable features here in Blaenavon, and of course it was built originally with contributions from miners' pay. They each paid a couple of pence each week,
yes.
And some of the local dignitaries added to it, and that's how that fine building came to be built.
And it's a great thing that fine building is still standing and is still serving the community more than 100 years after it was first built. And as you say, through the graft, the sweat of those miners and local people who felt that an institute or, you know, memorial hall, whatever people called them in the different valleys, but they all did the same thing, didn't they? They were there for the working man, and in fairness, it usually was the working man back in those days, but really so far-sighted.
Oh yes, and a centre of education, the theatre, arts,
yes.
Music, all sorts of things
on
there.
It certainly did. As well, in many cases, there's a lot of playing of snooker or billiards,
yes.
As well, because, I mean, that was always very, very popular too. But, of course, it was a home then, and as I say, I'm talking generally now about all the workmen's halls, memorial halls and so on around, well, Wales in general, but obviously particularly in the South Wales valleys, where choral work could be performed, amateur dramatics, professional shows, as we've said, you know, poetry. They had reading rooms, didn't they?
They had the reading rooms, and of course, most important, the library.
The library.
The library was there.
Well, yes. Now then, libraries. So that brings us on to our topic of conversation this morning, Dawn. We need to know, first up, a little bit about your good self before we start talking about Blaenavon Tales. So please, Dawn, give us a sort of a brief synopsis of what it's all about, being Dawn.
Well, I was born and brought up in Blaenavon, lived here all my life, and lived in an area which had quite a lot of historical interest.
Yes.
And I lived in a place called Shepherd Square,
mm-hmm.
which is very near the ironworks.
Right, yes.
And Stack Square is the one which is usually the well-known one, because it's still survives.
Right, right.
And there have been a couple of TV programmes about it.
There has,
I lived just down the road in Shepherd Square, which actually was a bit older than Stack Square. It started in the 18th century, it was built. And so I know the area really well.
Well, that really is good. And I mean, obviously then, you are ideally placed to come up with the book, which we'll talk about now in a moment or two, set around Blaenavon. And the other thing that you've reminded me, of course, is that, I mean, Blaenavon really was all about the iron industry, wasn't it, back in the day?
Yeah. Originally iron. Then, of course, we had the wonderful Gilchrist Thomas, who found the new steel process.
Mm-hmm.
And that made the steel even more important. And it was steel from Blaenavon went all over the world.
Well, quite right.
And then, of course, there was the coal, because the coal was needed to to support the foundries which made the iron and steel.
Yes, yes. So, I mean, in many respects, Blaenhaven is an absolutely classic area for heavy industry back in the Victorian times, yes. with all the good and all the bad things that, you know, that brought. But clearly, employment at the end of the day for most people, and obviously being able to put food on the table was what it all was about.
Absolutely, and workers came from all over the country, came here to find work.
Yes, yes.
And we're very fortunate that some of the places where the iron was made and so on, they are now still in existence, and as a result of it, we've become a World Heritage Site.
And that is an accolade which is not handed out willy-nilly by people,
no.
Is it? No, no, not
no.
at all.
No.
So I was going to say, you obviously are very proud of coming from Blaenhaven. That clearly comes through in everything that you say.
Yes.
And you're also part of the Blaenhaven Heritage History Group, I think.
I am. I go to the Heritage History Group, and we concentrate on the heritage of Blaenhaven. And we've produced a few books.
Yes, yeah.
One of our main ones was called Open for Business, which was all about all the different shops in Blaenhaven.
Mm-hmm.
In Broad Street.
Yes.
Like a lot of little towns, the streets, Broad Street in particular, has changed now, and we haven't got as many shops as we used to. But in its heyday, it was a thriving business area.
Yes, yes. And I mean, that's the thing, isn't it, sadly, with so many villages around everywhere, I mean, throughout the whole of the UK, but particularly, again, in the South Wales valleys, it's a question of, well, how it used to be and how it is now are two very, very different stories, aren't they?
Quite, yes. And society's changed. I mean, you know, people have cars now and they get out of town and they go to retail parks
Indeed. So just to sort of finish off a little bit more about your good self, though, Dawn, what sort of profession did you follow when you were that little bit younger, dare I say, before you know anybody throws things at me? But
I was a little bit younger at
yeah.
one time.
At one time, yeah. Well done. So
and... I was a teacher. I worked locally. I worked in the one of the local secondary modern schools and later on the comprehensive. And
okay.
I did that. I survived for 35 years.
Well done, too. I mean, not easy in this world that we live in now to have been a teacher.
Indeed.
No, not at all.
Yep.
Not at all. So writing, was it always something that you fancied having a go at when you had the time?
Oh, yes. I've always liked writing. I mean, my favourite subject at school was English.
Yes, yes.
I went to the local secondary modern school, and we had a marvellous English teacher there called Miss Muriel James.
Okay.
And she was very, very, very good, always inspired and supported me. So, you know, it started there, really.
And you know, let's be honest, this is how life is, isn't it? It's teachers
yes.
that can inspire, and obviously
yes.
then, you know, it absolutely puts the children in one direction that they think, yeah, that's something that I want to have a go at.
Yes.
So,
and then in my profession, you know, I had to do quite a bit of writing as
yes.
part of teaching.
Sure.
And I've always liked writing, and I particularly like humorous writing.
Mm-hmm.
I write a bit of humorous poetry, and I've had a little bit of success with the Killian Festival, where I've been shortlisted for the All Wales Comic Verse.
Right.
So I've done a bit of that.
You've done a bit of that. Excellent. So
I've
now
done a bit of that.
Let's talk specifically then about Blaenhaven Tales. So just give us the sort of the premise of the book, if you will. And as we said, where the sort of ideas came from.
Well, I come from a long line of storytellers.
Yes.
When I was a child, my father had seven brothers and sisters, and my mother had four. So there was a huge range of stories to tell.
Yes.
And aunts and uncles, would, particularly aunts, would turn up in dark winter nights and tell us these tales of their childhood. Mm-hmm. So I was always fascinated by these. They had so many different tales to tell, and always with humour. There was always something a little bit funny about it all.
Right, right.
So it started there. One aunt in particular, my auntie Gwen, was quite a character. And I based the little girl in the book, Blaenhaven Tales, her name is Gwenny Edwards, and she's based on my aunt, my auntie Gwen.
Okay.
Who, right up until her, just before she died, could tell a wonderful story. She was particularly adept at making you smile. A lovely lady.
Indeed. And obviously that left a very, very big impression on you.
It did indeed. And for a long time, I wanted to write down some of these stories she told me. I mean, obviously she wasn't around in the 1860s, but she knew an awful lot about that period in time.
Yes, yes.
And in more recent times, I've gone to a creative writing group. And my tutor there, Mrs. Meyer Pitt, she encouraged me to write these things down. And I owe her a great deal for all the help and support she's given me and encouragement.
Right, right. Well, that's good to know that again, somebody has been there to just help you on your way.
Oh, yes. I mean, there are so many people who've supported me, that the Heritage History Group.
Right.
They've supported me. My creative writing group. Sean at Candy Jar Books has
yes.
got the patience of a saint.
Oh,
with
no,
me.
He has. It's very true. It's very true. So,
indeed.
How? So, with all of these people that have pushed you in the right direction, what was it, though, specifically about the idea of mixing sort of fact and fiction together? Where did you get that idea from originally?
Well, like you, I love the Welsh newspaper archives.
Right, yes.
I could spend hours and hours on there. And I started looking up, by doing a bit of research for the history group, and I found some of these unusual excerpts from newspapers. The one about the sheep jumping through the chemist's shop, the pawn shop's window and
right.
so on.
Yeah, yes.
And things like that. And I thought, well, I ought to collect these and use them, do something with them, because
right.
they're unusual and they have a bit of a tale to tell.
Indeed.
So I collected up the most unusual excerpts, and then I started building a story around them.
Okay.
So the basis is fact. I mean, the sheep did really jump through Mr. Solomon's window.
Right.
But the story around it is fiction.
Got you. Okay. Well, this is it's a clever way, isn't it, of introducing children to some of these stories from the dim, distant past, and as you say, then weaving it in with fiction, and it gives children something that it's very sort of attainable to them, isn't it? They can understand, you know, what you're getting at, and clearly, it sounds as though the book's going to be a roaring success.
Well, I first of all self-published it through Jelly Bean Books.
Yes, yes.
And it sold quite a lot of copies, and it was intended for children, top juniors, lower secondary.
Right.
But to be honest, there were quite a few adults who enjoyed it as well.
And why not? Yeah, why not?
They could remember some of the places I'd mentioned in the book. And some of them were old enough to remember some of the strange things that went on.
Right.
So they enjoyed it very much, yes. Also, I think it's very important that youngsters, I know we're going through hard times at the moment, and some families in particular are suffering, but I want them to understand that This is not a new thing, sadly.
No, well,
it's been going on for centuries.
That is true. And of course, the spirit then comes through, doesn't it, of the
yes.
communities and the individuals themselves
yes.
to still all try
yes.
to make ends meet and to help their neighbours.
Absolutely. And to survive it all with a bit of humour and, to realise that we can get on with life however difficult it is.
Whatever is thrown at us, there you are. So, how long did it actually take you to put the book together, from a writing point of view, Dawn?
Well, it took several years, Kerry, because originally I'd written some of the stories and then I went back and found all these little excerpts. Some of them I found the newspaper cuttings first, and I put the stories to them, and sometimes the other way around.
Yeah, okay.
So eventually I got it into some order. And as I said, I go to the creative writing group, so I would take along a chapter and mm-hmm. I would read it to the group.
Yes.
And then they would all give me their ideas and criticisms, for which I was very grateful because
Indeed.
They're a great group.
Indeed. So, I mean, that works well, doesn't it? Then, I mean, you
yes.
know, to have a sounding board there with all of your chums and friends.
Yes, yes. And they would come up with new ideas as well and say, suggest this or do that.
Right, right.
And so it came into being, really. It took a long time. But I'm glad I did it now.
Well done. So, I mean, now the book is sort of, as you've mentioned, obviously, that you self-published initially, but now Candy Jar are releasing it again on the 27th of April. So
yes.
clearly you're going to be very excited about that. I would imagine, obviously, within that creative writing group that you're involved with now, you've become a little bit of a star with them all.
Well, I wouldn't say that, Kerry.
Go on, Dawn, say it.
Yes, I feel quite humbled that it's come to this,
lovely,
actually.
Lovely, lovely. Well, I mean, that's really good.
And I have to mention Mrs. Mary Challenger.
Yes, indeed.
Who's a friend of mine and is an older lady, and she's worked in art and illustration all her life. And she did the illustrations for the book.
Understood.
And it's something she always wanted to do, she said.
Uh-huh. So it's been a sort of an ambition for her, which has now been achieved.
Yes. I mean, she's a marvellous artist, and she's known locally.
Brilliant, brilliant.
She doesn't get out much now.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I was so thrilled when I asked her, would she do some illustration for me? And she jumped at the chance, and I'm grateful.
Well,
for
that's
that.
Lovely. So I'm assuming, obviously, you've had some very good feedback from all the people in Blaenavon itself and hopefully from further afield too.
Yes, yes. My cousin took it upon herself to let everybody know that I'd written this little book.
Right.
My cousin Gloria is actually my Auntie Gwen's daughter.
Right, okay.
So I suppose she felt some pride as well in it.
Well, of course.
And she contacted cousins and friends near and far. So they've all been subjected to the little book now.
Right, fair enough. They've had no choice in the matter whatsoever.
No.
Lovely. Well, it's been lovely having the chance to have a little chat with you this morning, Dawn. And I really, really hope, obviously, that the next launch now on the 27th of April goes very, very well and that people feel they'd like to find out all about this book. And it does sound like it's a great way of kids being able to learn a bit about their history.
I hope so. I hope it goes well. I'm sure it will. I know Sean's been very supportive. And all of them are Candy Jar books now, and
yes.
I'm very grateful.
Well, there we are. Well, I shall give people all the details again in the last half an hour of the programme of the book so that they know where to go to find it. But as I say, Dawn, thank you so much for joining me this morning. And I wish you well, and I hope, obviously, there'll perhaps be a follow-up book in the future.
Well, I'm working on it, as they say.
Good. Well, that's the answer. That's the answer. Dawn, thank you so much for your time. And as I say, hopefully, maybe you'll be able to come down and see me in the studio here in Cardiff sometime in the future when you can talk a little bit about the next project.
Thank you, Kerry, and I hope you'll pay a visit to Blaenau at some point.
It's a long time, a few years since I've been up there, so yes, I do need to get up to Blaenau again soon.